Hello and welcome to the Storytelling with Puck podcast. We will, as always, start with a story.
There once was a small child, happy in her own company, who loved music, art, and nature. She was full of fun and mischief and had daily adventures in her back garden, which backed onto the woods. Whenever she felt afraid, she would sing to herself in the dark, the words of the songs bringing comfort to her, and she would sing herself to sleep. As she grew, she started to hear a drum beat. Far away in the distance, which she could not resist. So one day, against her parents' wishes, she went to explore. She came across a witch who took away her music. She would not need it along this path, she said, and the girl closed her heart to song, but she still heard the drum calling, calling. Then she came across a wise man who angrily told her to put down her sketchbook. She would not have space to carry this on the path ahead, he said, and he gave her a heavy rock to carry in its stead. The drum still called to her as she dragged her feet forward across the dales and hills, calling, calling, calling. For years she travelled, adding rocks to her backpack through storms, hail, wind and snow, sometimes resting for a while in a warm, sunny place, but always moving on, pushing through and never giving up. Until one day she came across a strong, tall oak tree. Its branches filled the sky and its roots sank just as deep into the earth. The dryad of the tree welcomed the weary, battered girl. Come inside, she said, sit down, rest here for a while. The girl sat down and they talked. They talked about her love of music, her joy of creating, and the stories of her journey. They laughed, they cried, as the years unraveled and the girl placed her rocks on the hearth, one by one. Once all that was said was needed to be said, the girl shut her weary, tear-stained eyes and listened. In the darkness, she found she was no longer afraid, and she could hear the drum beat louder and louder. Her heart opened once again, and there she was, the woman with the drum. She had been there all along.
Oh, I love that story. Thank you so much, SJ. Before we start, a little note to anybody who is listening for the first time or anyone who has forgotten. My name is Stefano. I run Puck Creations and I am the regular host of this podcast. If the title Storytelling with Puck hasn't given it away, this podcast is all about stories. We will share stories, chat about stories, and see how stories fit in with the business world too. Of course, we couldn't do that without our wonderful guests. So let's start this podcast properly by introducing SJ Woods. SJ, let's make this podcast episode flourish by finding out a little bit more about who you are.
Hi, Stefano. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I absolutely love it. And just love the stories that are coming out and the real people and the humanness of it. So thank you so much for having me on.
Absolute pleasure to have you here. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourselves, who you are, and maybe a little bit about where that story comes from as well.
Okay, so I'm Sarah Jane Woods. People call me SJ. And I am an emotional health coach for women. And that story comes from my childhood, as a lot of our stories do. Through my travels of being a therapist and a coach for women, it's our stories that bring ourselves to life, aren't they?
Yeah.
And actually, when we start to look back on our past, we can see things that we've left along the way sometimes. And for me, particularly song and art and creativity is something that I'm rediscovering right now. And thanks to the storytelling with Puck, because that's actually cracked open a nut for me. So it's been brilliant.
That's wonderful to hear, because your creativity is boundless. It's clear to see, it's clear to hear, it's clear to listen to for all of our, everybody tuning in as well. And I say tuning in, we don't have a radio station, but I've got carried away. but what I loved about the story was, whether or not the metaphors that you are referencing throughout the story are a constant link to people who are listening, or they have the same feelings as you do, there's a rhythm to the story. There's a beat, and the music and the creativity that you put into it. You could have a very distant relationship with it, or a very close relationship with it, depending on your emotions at the time and how much depth you put into listening to it as well. So that's something that I found really powerful. When you've told that story to other people, what kind of reaction have you had to it? How have people related to it?
Oh, gosh, in all sorts of different ways. So women particularly seem to, it's great that you do relate to it. I spend a lot of my time with women, and that's not to the detriment of men. I think men are wonderful creatures as well.
Some.
But that a lot of women resound with it. We tend to leave a lot of things behind as we grow. You know, we get married, we have children, we have relationships, and we juggle a lot, women, don't we? We're quite strong, and we're usually the linchpin of the family that keeps everything going. And we put aside our dreams for everybody else. And I get a lot of women saying to me, "Oh my goodness, yes, that really makes sense to me." And and that's why I do what I do, because it's about bringing women wholly back to themselves, and being able to have their own lives, you know, as well as being this Wonder Woman who serves their family and their friends and their children.
So tell me more about that. When you explain a typical woman's life, and especially over time, that's changed a lot. But there, as you say, there's still a lot of sacrifices. Interestingly, I was watching, I don't know if you call it Z or Z, it's an American show, but about Scott F. Fitzgerald and Zelda, his partner. And it's only one series long, but it talks about him being a writer and how he is constantly trying to have his space and write what he wants to write, but actually he's also constantly stealing from Zelda's diary and the things that she writes. And she is an amazing writer in herself, but the idea of her ever being what she wants to be and being free and being allowed to be published is unheard of. It would have been unspeakable in the times that they were talking about. Over time, that's improved quite a lot.
In fact, decades later, I believe Zelda herself was published.
But there's still family dynamics which shape and mold what we think we're allowed to do and what we are actually allowed to do as well. How do you deal with that in your therapies and your conversations with the women that you speak to?
Well, really, I mean, everybody's individual, aren't they? So everybody's got their own story, and that's what I love about human beings in general. We all are just a mixture of the experiences that we've had, and that's all we are, really. And you know, women are very different, but I can speak from my background, where my mum was a working mum. She was quite forwardly advanced for her age group, because she was an older mum for me as well. My sister is 11 years older than me.
Okay.
So I'm quite the baby of the family. And I was always the black sheep of the family as well. And I know you talk about black sheep sometimes, which always makes me smile. So the generations, my mum was out at work full time when I was little. She gave me my work ethic, which is great. But she also, everything had to be perfect. So we lived in a perfect house. It was like a show home. You know, everything was, how she did it, I will never know, because mine certainly doesn't look like that. but she was amazing. And she gave me all the strengths that I have, but also when difficult situations came up, she couldn't deal with them. She would just put them to one side and move on. There was no emotion there at all. You know, we couldn't talk about emotions. And children were more to be seen and not heard. And she was more worried about what the neighbours thought about the family than what we thought about ourselves. And, you know, it was that kind of thing. But it was that kind of era.
Yeah.
And I get it. You know, I absolutely get it. I mean, when you think my parents grew up in the war, you know, so actually that they went through so much trauma in their young lives that actually growing up through that, they had to have coping strategies, and their coping strategy was, we don't think about it. We just look at the next day and we just carry on, right. You know, and that's where it comes from, isn't it? It's actually, you know, it's a natural thing that our bodies do. We shut down trauma because actually we don't want to think about it and we move on.
Yeah. So to interrupt. But yes, it's true. Again, I say this quite a lot on these episodes. I'm not a therapist, so my opinion is just my opinion. You are actually a therapist, so that helps.
All the answers, though.
Yeah, no, that's true, but still, it helps. At least we can look at a professional opinion this time. But something that I find, because I agree with your point, is that we definitely do, all of us, men, women, just humans, we bottle things up and we don't want to talk about the hardest things. Nowadays, we're encouraged more, I believe, to talk about things. We're encouraged more to be free and to let ourselves go. But I think you're right. In my parents' generation, the idea of talking about emotions and talking about what we were going through and talking about the challenges of potentially not having enough money at some point, or the challenges of relationships, or the challenges for my parents. I imagine I'm the youngest of six. So like you, I'm the baby of the family. I imagine having six kids isn't easy. I currently don't have any children, but I imagine having six kids is almost impossible at times. But the idea that they would ever complain, that they would ever talk about it as being a negative or anything other than what's next, what are we doing next, how are we progressing, how are we moving forward, it just wouldn't have happened. When Gary Nightingale came onto our podcast, I think it's episode 4, I'm not 100% sure, but I think episode 4, he talked about that stoicism and his parents' generation as well. And also his generation to a degree, and similarly how emotions weren't released. But what I liked about the way he described it is he doesn't describe it, just like you did then, he doesn't describe it in a negative way. He just describes it as it was, we learn, and we move on. What are your thoughts on that, and how we move forward, and what we do when we look back into the past as well, and how we reflect on it?
This is where my project management training comes in. So my other arm is a project manager. So this is where that comes in. And I always think about lessons learned. Yeah. So in project management, when we look back on projects before we start a new one, we always try and look at old projects and see what lessons we've learned from them, so we don't make the same mistakes again, basically. And I've always used that through my life. So that's what I was taught to do through my life. You know, when change comes along, because that's what project management is, it's all about change and growing through change. It is about just learning from the past. And, you know, we can't change the past, can we? The past is the past. It's there. It's there. But what it does is it haunts us sometimes. So sometimes those emotions actually haunt us from the past. Right. So when I look back on the past, I think, And part of the therapy that I do actually looks at people's pasts and is like post-traumatic stress disorder and things like that. And people get flashback memories and they come in. But the interesting thing is the way our brain works is when we actually remember something negative, we store fear with it. So the way our body works is it all slows down. Do you ever have that moment where you fall over and you know you're falling, but you can't stop yourself? Yeah. Everything's just slows down. It's your stress response and your fear actually it's kicking in. And when we remember that, we remember it with that little bit of fear. So when someone is traumatized and they remember that fear, the fear is attached to the memory.
Okay.
So if we can go back to that memory and we can desensitize that fear, then actually we don't take that into the future with us. And that's what I specialize in. Mm-hmm. It's difficult, isn't it? I've always been positive. I've always been a half full cup kind of girl. Just go for it. And, you know, just do what you want to do. It gets me into trouble. But that's okay. But also having been through my journey through the therapies as well, and actually learning what I needed to learn to be who I am today, I had to learn all these things that I learned through my past. And a lot of my mum's response to emotion was because my dad couldn't handle his. So she would shut it down and we would ignore it.
Okay.
So it was interesting that we found that this person that we used to live with could not cope because of the traumas he'd had in his childhood. He couldn't cope with his anger at all. And it used to come out into the family. So my mum used to protect us by saying, "Oh, just don't talk about it. It's fine, you know." And we used to just carry on. But actually, going back into my past and realizing that that has happened has actually made me feel a lot better towards my parents.
That's interesting. Towards both parents as well.
Yes, absolutely. Because I understand it from both their points of view.
So when you do that, when you look back into the past, I've not been through your situation. I've not been in that position. I know people who have been in that situation. And sometimes looking back on it feels almost impossible because, as you say, the connection, it's not a logical process. I can look at it from the outside and potentially say, oh, okay, I kind of understand why somebody might be like that. I kind of understand why they might have done what they've done, if it's good or if it's bad. I understand why people are trying to cope in the way they are, etc. But being there, to have that almost desensitized look that you were talking about, isn't a case of thinking logically. So when you were going through that at first, if you don't mind talking about this, and you were... when you were thinking about what your dad used to do, how mm-hmm. your mum used to cope, mm-hmm. the feelings that you had when you were a kid whilst this was all happening, the knowledge that you had or didn't have, because a lot mm-hmm. of the time you don't actually, I think as a kid, know what's going on, you just feel some of it. When you looked back at that as an adult at first, what were your feelings, what were your emotions, and then how did they evolve?
Well, when I first, all I knew that was my dad was a very angry man. And all I ever got was, I don't know why your dad's so angry. That was his mum. She used to say to me, I really don't know why your dad's so angry and why he takes it out on you. That's all I got. That was it. That was the acknowledgement of it. That was it. But I left home when I was 17 because I couldn't cope living at home anymore, basically. So I went through my own journey of becoming, I became homeless. I got married very young at 19. I had my son. He was on the autistic spectrum. I can't get the words out. And I went on this journey but I was all right because my mum had given me all this resilience. Actually, I was this really resilient person. So everything that I went through, I just learnt from. And then When my son, my first husband left when my son was three, he couldn't cope with the diagnosis, and he had a lot of his own trauma going on, which I didn't even realize at the time, because we didn't talk about those things at the time. He left, so I was left on my own in a massive amount of debt with a young boy with autism, and I was just left to bring him up, basically. So I did.
So you did what you had to do.
But as I got older, and my parents started to rely on me for their health, actually, that's when the resentment started, and I started to resent them, because actually, it was almost like hang on a minute. You didn't want me. I was the black sheep of the family. I was always the one that was in trouble. I was always the one that was the terrible person. And yet now you need me. Now I'm okay. I don't think that works that way. Yeah. So that's when I started my journey. And that was about 10 years ago, probably. But now I can say, I love my mum. I love my dad. I understand why it happened. And I can look back, even on the times when I was in that trauma, I can look back at it and I can go, he must have been dealing with so much right then.
Wow. That's powerful. That's really powerful.
Yeah. Actually, it's you releasing it. It's your emotion. We create our own emotion, believe it or not. It's as unique to us as our fingerprints.
Explain it in a bit more detail. Explain what you mean by that.
So people think that we're triggered. So we talk about our triggers, don't we? What triggers emotion in us. Yeah. But actually neuroscience is now coming out, and it's relatively new, that we actually create our own emotion. So we construct it as well as we construct an idea, a dream, anything else. It all comes from within us. And it's a pattern. It's a pattern that we've learned to do. And we learn to do so well that we can't see it.
That's interesting, because it feeds in to a degree to, I meditate quite a lot. I use guided meditation via an app, and sometimes I just meditate self-guided. And a big part of meditation is learning to acknowledge what we can and we can't control. And that comes to emotion as well. It comes to understanding that you're going to have feelings, you're going to have thoughts. Don't try and push them away, and also don't run with them. Just let them sit, acknowledge them, say, okay, they're there, and then let them be. And I think part of that potentially feeds into what you're talking about now, which is the idea of the neuroscience that we create our own emotions. I've never thought of the word create our own emotions before, but am I getting anywhere with that? Does that make sense?
You are indeed. So mindfulness comes in terms of we are here in the present, and we are constantly feeling our environment through our senses. So through our five senses, through our sight, our hearing, our touch, our taste, our smell, we are experiencing the world all the time. Mm-hmm. So the world changes moment by moment, and that actually brings up emotion in us. It drives it down. I could look at a poem. It was a bit like what you were saying about the story earlier on, was you can be as far away from it or as close to it as you want to be. Mm-hmm. And actually, depending on your emotion and depending on your mood at that point. So we can be in an amazing anxious mood. I do anxiety really, really well. I've learned how to be anxious really well. I know my anxiety inside out. I know when it starts, I know where it goes. And our anxiety always starts with something in our body. So our body actually stores this emotion, and it stores it in a certain way, and it feels in a certain way, and it looks in a certain way to us when we start to look into it. And when we start to actually recognize what it is and how it rises in us, we can recognize it quicker and quicker and quicker as it comes into us, and then we can go, no, that's not going to serve me right now. I can actually put that to one side and I can do something else.
Okay.
And that's what I do as an emotional health coach. I help people through that and be able to switch our emotions. So if we create our emotions, if we can believe that we create our emotions, because it's just a construct like everything else in life, if we believe that we create our emotions, then actually we can create happiness as well as we can create anxiety. We've just got to learn how to do it better.
That makes a lot of sense. It really does make a lot of sense. I'm not sure if it will make sense to everyone, because no, genuinely, because it's a hard thing to get your head around. It really is.
It is such a new thing. Yeah. There is a book called How Emotions Are Made by Lisa Feldman Barrett.
Okay.
And it is all the neuroscience behind this. And it is, she is a scientist, top scientist in her field. And
What I love about the idea of that book, and what I love about when you introduced the concept, you introduced it as neuroscience, is that sometimes when people talk about emotions and sometimes when people talk about therapy, they think it's all fluffy. We don't need therapy. What we need is, well, we need stoicism, like we talked about earlier. We need we need to just get on with life, and we need to get over it, and we need to be resilient, and we just need to get on. What I love about the way you talked just then was neuroscience. People think, well, we need to be scientific. Emotions are scientific. How do you approach that? How do you approach the idea of fluffiness when people come to you?
Woo-woo question. Everyone calls me woo-woo. I love it. Bring on the woo-woo. I always answer with, okay, so what's woo-woo about the natural, the way we work?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, when we talk about, I talk a lot about nature connection.
Yes.
You know, a lot of the trauma that I've been through and all the troubles that I've been through my life, I turn to nature. It's just what I do. I do it naturally because I grew up playing in the woods. That's how I learned how to do it. And now whenever I felt in trouble, I always turn to nature.
It's your peace. It's your home.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've forgotten what the question was now, Stefano.
What do you do when people say to you what you do is all fluff? It doesn't matter. It's not scientific.
So we're learning a lot more scientifically about nature connection as well. And it's all about how we connect with nature. It's all about the forest bathing and things like that are coming out of Japan. And the studies that are happening now are just incredible. And we know how trees talk to each other under the earth and all this kind of thing. Now, people might say that's woo-woo. But actually, the science now is backing it up. We've got university students doing master's degrees on it. It's incredible. Look at the University of Derby. They're doing amazing work on nature connection and science behind it. And this emotions book as well from Lisa Feldman Barrett is just incredible. And it's all this stuff is coming out now that actually all the stuff that we knew instinctively all along as human beings, actually, it's right. Fighting it for so long.
The evidence is coming along now. The evidence.
Naturally, us, you know. And once we release ourselves back to nature, because we are nature. That's what people forget. They see nature as a separate entity. Actually, we're in it. We're there, baby. We are nature. You know, that's how we're born. That's how we'll die. We are nature. So actually, if we don't appreciate the fact that we are nature, then I'm sorry, but well, if you think it's woo woo, then.
I think it's important for people to realize that it's not woo-woo for themselves as much as anything else, because the idea to play to the business world a little bit and to what we do and why we tell stories constantly and why we are always encouraging other people to tell stories is because of emotion. It's because of that connection. It's because of the links that we have that are almost unspoken. Words cannot describe sometimes the feelings that we get. It's almost impossible to do. And when people talk about sales and marketing, some people say, I never buy anything out of emotion. I'm purely a logical person. I only ever think about consequence A and consequence B. I'm sorry, but it's a pure lie. Every single one of, well, maybe not even an intentional lie, but it's definitely a misjudgment. Every single one of us buy through emotion and we back up what we then buy through logic. And in some ways, I think what you're talking about now with the science backing up our instincts is kind of playing along those lines too. And emotion is really important. And if we can get in touch with it and understand it better and almost make emotion logical in some ways, then maybe we can all connect a little bit better. So that's part of the reason that we do what we do as well.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because when you're in project management, they say we have to win the hearts and minds of people to bring them along with the change.
Uh-huh.
It's exactly the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, we have to give them a desire and a why and a purpose of why they need to change. And then if they see that, then they'll change easier than if they don't.
Yeah.
So it's all linked to the heart. And you know, it's amazing actually when you start to look into the science behind all this, because it just works. And what you were saying about not having enough words to describe our emotions, I'm just doing some research at the moment into words that are, I can't repeat any at the moment, but there's loads and loads of words in different languages that describe different emotions. Oh. We don't have a very large vocabulary for emotions in England, in the UK. So the English language doesn't have a lot of granularity within their emotions. And this is part of emotional health. If we have more words to describe how we feel and we're able to label them with words, then we can then share those and understand them more. But because we don't, you know, we're angry, we're in fear, we love, you know, all those kind of things. Actually, if we can't describe them, how can we talk about
them? How can we talk about them and understand them better? It's interesting, there's a Dutch word called gezellig, which kind of means cozy, warm. But again, there's no real English translation for it. I'm not describing it very well because it's very difficult to describe exactly what it means. I think the closest way I can describe it is probably by saying, I think it's, I'm not going to pronounce this correctly. In Finnish, they have the word huche or something along those lines. It's almost a synonym or a translation, a Dutch translation for that. And I know that some people know the Finnish word better than they know the Dutch word. So maybe that will help. But as you say, it's weird that we don't have it in the English language. We do have different ways of describing things with combinations of words, though, which is something that you do very well in your poetry and in your stories. And we've just been talking about the soul. So I was wondering if maybe you would be willing to do a bit of soul singing for us.
Most definitely. So this is very short and sweet, but it's what nature means to me.
Before we find out what nature means to SJ, now is probably a good time to remind you that you are listening to episode 14 of the Storytelling with Buck podcast. So far, we've been privileged to be able to beat our drums to SJ's rhythm. We've discovered more about what inspired SJ's opening story, and we've also discovered a little about how things have changed for SJ over time. As you continue to listen, you will hear us dig deeper into the world of emotion to discover SJ's connection to forest bathing. Plus, we'll talk about how project management connects with stories and emotions too. Of course, before this episode ends, we will read a story from Puck Creations. So, SJ, when you're ready, let's have some soul singing.
So the sea, her waves, they dance for me, dance with me. The sky, his clouds, he opens me, smiles for me. The birds, their joy, they sing to me, sing with me. The earth, I walk, it comforts me, speaks with me. And the wind, the leaves, whisper to my soul.
That's so beautiful. Is that how you feel when you were in nature?
Yeah, nature's joy to me. It's absolute joy. You know, I can go out and walk along the beach. I have two main places where I go. So if I want to dream or I want to create or I really want to sort of inspire myself, I walk by the sea. I'm very lucky where I live. I live by amazing beaches and things like that. So if I want inspiration, I go somewhere where there's big sky. I call it big sky. And I just love it because it just opens up the mind and you can just start to dream and really look at the clouds. And then when I'm feeling a little low or I feel like I need some comfort, I go to the trees because the trees are always my friends. And people think I'm nuts, but, you know, actually, I've been really happy through COVID.
Because you've been able to.
I haven't really changed what I do. So I still go out and play in the woods with the squirrels and the birds. And yeah, it just brings me such joy. So that's how I connect to my joy. And we just need to be able to connect to our joy and our happiness easier than we connect to our anxiety and our stress and our trauma and everything else that goes on in our lives. It's really important that we talk about it. Don't get me wrong. It is really important that we talk about it because it will come up to bite you if you don't later on in life. But also we don't have to dwell with it. We can learn from it and we can move on.
That's a really important point, I think. So we can discuss, and actually discussing it, it helps us not to dwell.
Yeah, it just releases it, doesn't it? As soon as you've got something inside you and you're not saying it, it just builds and builds and builds inside your head until it gets so big that you can't actually, you can't let it out. But if you just let it out, it dissipates. The power just goes. It's just gone. And it's just like, oh, really? Oh, well, nobody really cares. Great. That's fine then. So it is. But so we have so many inhibitions, don't we? Particularly in the UK, we're quite stiff upper lip and we don't like to show things off, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a thing, and it's about just being okay to be you.
That's something we concentrate on quite a lot too. And actually, it's important to, I think, sometimes reflect and understand who you are. And again, so, you know, going away from the idea of fluffiness, bringing it back to business. And when we talk to our clients, we talk about defining their brand and understanding who they truly are. And that all connects with emotion and that all connects with stories too. What I'm now interested in finding out a little bit more about is when you're doing your project management, as we've mentioned, that is another side to who you are, is the project management. And I know I've managed some projects, and my partner manages projects as well. And a lot of the management behind that is logical. It's process driven. It's working out how A gets to B and where the arrows go. But how would you say that emotions and stories play a part in project management?
Oh, that's a good one. Projects are run by people. They're not run by processes. If you don't get the human side of projects right, you're not going to get anywhere, because actually, as a project manager, you quite often you don't have any managerial responsibilities for people that are on the project. Actually, they're just coming into the project to do their bit and then move away.
Yeah.
So if you don't get on with people and you don't connect in some way, and stories are such a great way to connect, aren't they? They're how we find our commonality. So if we can't do that with people on a project, your project ain't going anywhere. So it doesn't matter how good you are with processes and procedures. This is the way I see it. And I, as I say, I've got a weird mind, so it might not.
I like weird minds. You're all good.
For me, the processes and procedures are there as a backbone. They're there to actually give you the backbone of the project, to say where you're going, to give you the roadmap. But any plan needs to be adaptable nowadays, because look at the change that we're having at the moment. Everything's got to be fairly agile and light, because you can't plan a day ahead now, let alone a month or 6 months or a year. So actually having what they call a roadmap, and my husband hates me using that word because the UK government uses it a lot. We have great arguments about it over the dinner table. But yeah, having a roadmap is really helpful, because it helps you to see what you're doing, and you're actually designing something by design, aren't you? You're actually saying purposefully, this is what I want and this is when I'm going to get there and how it's going to do. But actually smart goals about putting timescales and stuff like that to it, they can be helpful if it's a very small thing. Mm-hmm. If it's a big thing, I project manage in service design. So I literally bring user experience as well into service design. Okay. So I've worked for health and social care for the last 8 years. And the best projects are the ones that have the service users involved in designing the service, because actually you want to put your end user into the service to actually say, what do you need?
Yeah. What are we doing this for? Yeah.
So that's where people and passion and projects, and I only ever work on projects that I know will help people in the end. That's my thing. I don't work on other projects because they don't juice me. I've got to have some sort of emotional connection to the outcome of the project.
Okay. That makes sense. And what I find interesting as well is that's because it motivates you.
Yes, absolutely.
And you understand that, I think, intrinsically because of what you do away from project management too. Sometimes it seems that in businesses, when a project is needed, the people who are running the project, or at least the people who are running the project, expect that people should just want to do the project because, well, it's part of the business and we need to do a project. But a key part of any business and a key part of any project is motivating people. And that all comes down to understanding not just what the end user needs at the end of the project, not just what the end goal is, but also all of the people in between. What did they want to gain? Is it that, for example, somebody who's coming into the project and is maybe working on a particular technology has some kind of dream of making something bigger than they've ever made before? And can you give them that opportunity? Because that will emotionally connect to them. And when we talk about emotions, I often find that people seem to think, well, emotions are one of a few. So you're either very, very happy or you're very, very sad. And it's all about giving people big hugs to make them feel warm. But people forget about the other emotions that go along, such as your ego, things like anger, things like, because you've mentioned anger a few times today as well, excitement. All of these different emotions play in to what motivate people. And for me, when it comes to business and when it comes to project management and when it comes to both internal and external communications, and the reason we focus on emotions so much is because they're the motivating drivers. They are what encourage people to come with you and to want to help you and potentially to want to buy from you if you're thinking from that point of view as well. And so when you talk about project management just then, and you talked about how people are behind project management, that really resonated with me. And so I really appreciate the way you described that. It's fantastic. Now, a little before we talked about project management, you mentioned something which I'm not sure if many of our listeners will have heard before. And you talked about forest bathing. What is that? And is there, maybe you've got a different way that you can describe it.
Well, I have a little story. So this is how I use forest bathing. Forest bathing basically has come from Japan, and it's Shinron Yoku, and I probably have pronounced that completely incorrectly. But it is scientifically proven to help with anxiety, stress, and all sorts of things. And they're a very stressed race, the Japanese, you know. They're very purposeful driven, aren't they, from them when they're very young. And all the science that's coming out of this now, there are now societies where you can learn to forest bathe. But what I found through my life is I actually do it quite naturally, because it's just the way that I've always coped with stress and anxiety. But this is a poem about what it feels like.
Okay, brilliant.
So I woke up feeling broken from yesterday, knowing I had a choice to sit within this or to create a different energy for today. So I chose to walk out of my front door, music pumping in my ears to drown out the negative voices, bringing me alive again as I march purposely towards a future feeling. Not needing to know where I was going, no conscious thought, just an instinctive draw to reach a place that I needed. And now, here I stand bathing in the sun, listening to the birds chatter as they fly about their business, watching my breath drift wildly into the air to dance before me, softening my gaze out onto the frosty heath, sapling trees standing, different shapes, knowing their purpose, knowing that in their seeds, in their DNA, that they had something to be, something to do on this earth that no one could stop them, because it was planted deep within. I feel the tree bark, hard, solid, certain, pressing into my back, allowing me to rest for a while and soak in this beautiful day. Peace and serenity start to fill me with a deep happiness as I draw all this beauty within, and I gently close my eyes and send my roots deep into the ground. I imagine drawing the grounding earth up through my feet. A warmth and glow travels from deep, deep below, and I feel the energy draw up into my toes. With this, I can feel light and love for my new day. I know as it travels, it warms me deeply through my stomach, giving me strength, knowing that I have creativity coming up into my heart space and just allowing it to be. Enjoying that feeling, the smell of pine tree above me, the footsteps of a stranger walking past this place, my heart warming my smile, which travels up through my face, relaxing my temples and up into my head. There I am. Good morning.
It's not the morning, but good morning. I feel like I was there with you. I feel at peace. It's really wonderful. Really wonderful. Thank you for sharing another great story, and for letting us be there with you and experiencing what you were experiencing as you forest bathed. It's incredible how stories do generate that. They generate that feeling that we are with the narrator. We are with the characters in the story. And sometimes those characters are real and you're expressing your own feelings, and sometimes those characters are fictional, but we get brought into that world. We get brought into somebody else's place. And I love that. Also, what you did there, which I think is another benefit of stories, is you explained what forest bathing was without overly explaining what forest bathing was.
Mansplaining it.
Hang on a second. Genuinely, there's no, well, now then, all of you poor little listeners, let me explain to you exactly what forest bathing is as I tap you on the head. This is the feeling that I have when I forest bathe, and this is what it means to me. If you want to get behind the exact details of what it means, then you can find that out on Google. But if you want to get behind the feelings and what forest bathing means, then let's tell a story and explain it that way and get people to understand it on a deeper level, I think is kind of how I felt you were explaining it with your story there.
Yeah, and there are great forest bathing guides, you know, that it is becoming a thing now in the UK. So look up stuff near you, because there will be people, and I'm hoping to offer the service myself hopefully soon. But it is about guiding people through this process to help them release their stress. And once you learn it, you've got it for life. Mm. And it's always around you. And you can do it with a pot plant. You don't actually need to be outside.
So it's just the idea is just to be with nature of some kind.
Well, this is why I have a trees behind me. And I know listeners can't see that, but I always have trees with me in some shape or form. I wear a tree of life. I've got a tree tattooed on my back, actually, and I've got trees back in, because it's so ingrained into my identity now. And I married a man called Woods. I mean, what more do I want?
It's like you were searching that whole time. I hope that's not his only attribute. I've heard you talk about him before. He seems to be a lovely man.
One of many.
Still, it's a nice bonus. It's definitely a nice bonus.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So if people want your help with any of the things we've talked about today, if they either want support with project management, or if they need help with any kind of therapy, or if eventually they would like to go forest bathing, can you tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, of course. I hang out a lot on LinkedIn. That's how we met, wasn't it? Through a mutual friend. And I have a website.
2 seconds. We should mention that mutual friend because she's fantastic. And she set up a networking meeting, which we met in. Her name is Trisha Lewis. And she will be a guest on this podcast at some point in April too. But sorry, keep going and explain.
Yay, that's great news. Yes, I've got a website, sarahjanewoods.com. I have a blog and... hopefully in the next couple of months, and I'm going to have to do it now, setting up my YouTube channel. So yeah, there's a few videos out there, but I want to get some of this stuff out on video just to help people. Yeah, and talking about therapeutic writing as well, because I think it is very, very therapeutic to write your own story. We all have stories.
That's a lovely segue, actually, to talk about that now, because I've noticed you talk about therapeutic writing before. What does it do? How does it help you?
It's funny. It's another thing that I've turned to all my life, funnily enough, and I've always had a journal. So every night I journal my gratitude for whatever I have at that point in my life, and it keeps me grounded and it keeps me whole and it keeps me sane most of the time. But actually, therapeutic writing, you can write as much or as little as you want. You can explore your past and find the patterns and behaviors that actually have not served you or served you well. And any client that works with me, I always ask them to keep a journal. And just to, if an emotion comes up for them, what was the surroundings around that, and how did that manifest, and what impact does it have on you? So if that emotion is particularly negative and it stops you doing something, then that's something we need to sort out, because actually you don't need to feel that way.
So does it need to be writing to be able to do that, or could it be if people aren't comfortable with words and aren't able to express themselves with writing very well, could they draw something? Could they? Yeah.
Get it out in any way. So that's why there's art therapy, there's sound therapy, there's all sorts of things. So it's about getting it out of you and seeing it as a different, just seeing it objectively, being able to even talk to it.
Okay.
People are slightly nervous around that because of schizophrenia and things like that. But actually being able to see and talk to parts of yourself is really quite a healthy thing to do.
It's interesting because we do all have so many different parts of us. We do have all of these different elements that make us who we are. Yet we often don't acknowledge them as different parts. I'm actually going to steal something that I know you're on another podcast with Trisha, the aforementioned Trisha Lewis. Trisha Lewis, don't know why that was so hard to say, a few months back, and I listened to it, and it was a wonderful podcast. And I think you explained something on there. I'd like it to come from you, because I can't remember the exact words, but something about pieces. Maybe you can, do you have a memory of what you said?
Oh gosh, it's a long time ago. We need to fall apart sometimes to see all the pieces.
I absolutely loved that then. And sorry, Trisha, for stealing it, but I love it today as well. So
it's your saying, so I feel like
I'm allowed.
we do. Sometimes we have to have a day, you know, we have to have a time in our lives to fall apart, because if we don't, you just can't see them, can you?
No. So. That's beautiful. I really like it. Okay, so people now know where they can find you, which is wonderful. And one of the things that they can find is, I know there's a story which is particularly close to your heart, which you have written and is currently featured on your LinkedIn. If people would like to read it. But I would like to hear it from you, if you wouldn't mind.
So this comes from a story of my past, and my coping mechanism was always eating. So there's more detail in the blog, in the article that I've put on LinkedIn, but do check it out there. But this is the ode and a letter to my obesity. Hello, obesity, my old friend. You've come to dance with me again. The halls of my mind, where you once flourished and grew, have now changed, and I feel slightly askew. I can see you now as you really are. My guardian, my comfort, my protector. You were how I expressed myself as I learnt not to feel, when I grew up and the teenaged angst slowed to a dull roar, with angry clothes and hair that shut away the world. I used you more and more to cope with the life and relationships that I had chosen to prop me up in the world and keep a roof over my head. I let other hurt ones abuse my mind as I let you abuse my body. The sweet lure of sickly chocolate when I felt alone or unloved protected me as I stuffed my face with anything so I just didn't have to feel. The bulk of you inside me filled an empty hole of belonging. You wanted me. You made me feel whole and big and noticeable. But you gave the judges more sway as they projected the fatism around them onto me in their own way to feel whole and big and noticeable. And this just fed you more. No one listened or tried to understand why I was like I was. They just said, get on with it, set a goal. So I did. And every day I monitored what I put into my mouth and how much I moved my body. And the scale number tumbled to a level where it had stayed for months and years. Ups and downs in between, but never moving to where I truly yearned for it to be, back when I was young, innocent and whole. I understood that stress was your bedfellow. So I learned how stress affected my body, how it kickstarted my appetite and familiar behaviours of my guilt and shame-filled inner critic. It became easier to blame stress for my eating, so I learned how to calm my breathing, to gain control over my body responses, to stop my addiction to stress. And as I grew calmer, I grew stronger. I then named my emotions one by one and learned how I had become the way I was, knowing that my identity was so woven into you that you had become a part of me, which saw through my eyes and my heart. But I can see you now. I see the insidiousness of your allure, how you tempt me with the stories when I'm tired. If I'm run down or upset, you come back to visit, wheezing your way back through old pathways of my subconscious mind. And I'm here, telling you now, I see you and I know you. You are my sign to slow down, to feel, to notice myself and the world around me. And I thank you as my guardian. I accept you totally. I embrace you as the part of me that pulls me through the darkness. We will team up, you and I. We will work together to explore the joy and energy that true nutrition brings. I fill my life now with other things, writing, music, nature. My love for myself, my husband, and my home are my comfort blanket now. I love and forgive you for your misguided protection. I need you to keep reminding me and raising your hand when I am lost. I may not choose to feed you in the same ways, but I no longer need you to use you to punish me, just to nourish me. So farewell, obesity, my old friend. It is time to move on.
Just fantastic. And it's also the perfect example, I think, of writing therapy. It explains it in a way that trying to explain it would never work. And it's also a great time to say thank you very much for joining us on the Storytelling with Puck podcast. And thank you for sharing so many stories today, including a large part of your own story. Through the different stories that you shared, it has been genuinely wonderful to have you with us. SJ, Sarah Jane, thank you so much.
Thank you, Stefano. It's been a pleasure, always. Always love talking to you. And good luck with the podcast, because it's amazing. And I will be just sharing it with everybody.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
One brown leaf. Sitting alone on a mat where we wipe our feet. She had become hard and brittle in her solitary confinement,
All of her colour was drained. One brown leaf. Autumn had long passed. Winter was fading into memory, and spring was in bloom. Looking outside, she would have seen vibrant colours, saplings growing, branches blowing, and lawns that needed mowing. She would have seen soil made from the regeneration of her brothers and sisters, nourishing the roots that held everything together. Except her. She was taken away. She was forgotten. She was so close to life, but so close to death. A little care, a little nurture, a little love would be all it took for her to flourish once again. In a different form, with a different light, yes. But flourish all the same. One brown leaf. If only they all knew the support that she would provide for them too.
You've just been listening to the Storytelling with Buck podcast. We'll be back very soon, so make sure you subscribe and catch up on any of the episodes you've missed.